Getting back onto the agenda. We're coming in here live from the neighborhood facilities, the general meeting of the Hoopa Valley Tribe. Everybody's welcome. We had a great lunch. The elders were served and everyone else stood in line. We're going to go into more of a public discussion in just a moment here. So we're getting back to the general meeting of the Hoopa Valley Tribe. And they're doing a little cleanup and people are moving about, getting back to their seating. The Hoopa Elementary 8th grade is the crew that provided the meal and served the elders. And now they're doing a bit of the cleanup process. I don't have the agenda in front of me, but I understand we will be opening it up to a discussion and a live call-in. And once again, that phone number, if you want to call in later on during the 2 o'clock hour, is 1-844-264-5433. That's number again, 844-264-5433. That's KIVE, the 5433. So that's our 800 number. You can call in from wherever you're at. And when you're ready to ask your question, there is a bit of a lag time on the YouTube. So we ask that you ask your question and then take your answer on air. And we'll just disconnect the phone line for you. And you'll be able to hear your answer on the air. And hopefully they'll be generating more discussion as what happened we witnessed earlier in the first half of the session, that one comment led to another comment, and there we had a really nice, good discussion. So there's a lot of details that will be discussed. I imagine the SEDS plan, and they are encouraging and people to access to the online survey and fill in that survey. It's your opportunity to voice your opinion and present your ideas and your comments towards the plan right now. And then there'll be, at a later date yet to be called, another community meeting just on the SEDS plan and all of the comments that have been presented thus far. And so the community will have an opportunity to evaluate and add to, and then that will be presented to the Tribal Council for further discussion and approval. So we're getting ready to get started. So we're waiting for a few more people to finish up discussions. And I believe the chairman is coming back to the microphone. He's at the podium right now. So if you haven't already found the YouTube access, you can go to our website, www.kidefm.org, and right there on our homepage, you scroll down and there'll be the URL that will connect you right here to the YouTube presentation. Oh, a whole plate full of salmon and Indian bread just walk right past me here. That's being set up here on the side table, so if anybody would like to have just a little bit more, well, you're welcome to it. It's just about 1 o'clock p.m. You're listening to KIDE Hoopa, Hoopa Tribal Radio from the Greater Hoopa Valley. We almost had this program streaming, but we're still working on a few of the bugs in the system. There's just too long of a buffering that was happening on our live stream, so I thought, that would not help matters much, as I timed some of those buffering episodes to be 2 minutes before we came back on air, and either people would have lost their place in the discussion or decided, it's not working, I'll try something else. So we're still working on our ability to maintain that broadcast without buffering. And once we get that going, you'll hear another whole presentation of KIDE worldwide. So right now, with the help of the Hoopa Valley Tribal Council IT department, we have making available the YouTube version. So I understand the there is also access to the tribal budget. I'll try to get that posted up on our website as well. They have some USB cards here that have the budget on them. I'll try to get that information transferred over to our website so you can just...
Okay, we're going to...
Right there. Okay.
Good to go.
Looks like Chairman,
we're going to get started with the afternoon session. Again, we're going to go through starting with the current tribal issues. We had mentioned them earlier. Again, I'll just for everyone's update. The first presentation will be an update on the recent settlements, the federal government. The second presentation will be Vice Chairman Risling, and it will be related to the nepotism conflict of interest ordinance. Third presentation will be Slish Jackson from the museum related to the new cultural advisory committee that's being formed. And the final update, current issue, will be on tribal police. After that, we'll open up for public comments, public forum. We'll go into some closing remarks after that, and we'll adjourn. So as many of you have already learned, the tribe has agreed to a settlement of contract support costs claims with the Indian Health Service. We are also now contemplating a settlement with the Bureau of Indian Affairs for those same claims. We've asked our attorney, Tom Schlosser, and Rebecca Jackson to put together a PowerPoint to go over some of the key issues related to the settlements. First thing is just an overview of what we're going to be presenting. Number one will be defining what contract support costs are. The second is amount and coverage of the IHS contract support cost settlement. Third is the amount and coverage of the BIA contract support cost proposed settlement. The fourth bit of information will be the purpose of the settlement funds. Okay. All right, what are contract support costs? The Indian Self-Determination Act provides for contract support costs when tribes contract or compact with the federal government to run certain programs. There are two types of ongoing contract support costs, direct contract support and indirect contract support. What are contract support costs? Same slide. Direct contract support costs is for administrative activities that serve one program or cost objective. For example, travel expenses incurred to carry out the program and tribal fringe costs would constitute direct contract support. Indirect contract support pays for common or joint purposes benefiting more than one program. For example, accounting or human resources may constitute an indirect cost. Next, we'll get into the amount and coverage of the Indian Health Service contract support cost settlement. On September 10th, 2015, Indian Health Services and the tribe executed a settlement agreement covering the tribe's claims against IHS for underpayment of contract support costs from fiscal year 2006 through 2013. The settlement agreement requires IHS to pay the tribe $5.4 million plus interest running from November 24th, 2014. The funds will come from the Federal Judgment Fund and not from the Indian Health Services. Moving on to the BIA contract support cost proposed settlement. Again, there's a difference. We've already agreed to a settlement with the Indian Health Service. We've now got a proposed settlement from the Bureau of Indian Affairs. On September 16, 2015, Council and Raymond Navajo Chapter versus Jewell filed a proposed settlement agreement. If the court approves the settlement agreement, it will dispose of all class members' contract support cost claims from 1994 through 2013. HOOPA is a member of the class. The proposed settlement documents estimate that the tribe will receive $8.5 million in settlement of its 1994-2013 contract support cost claims against the Bureau of Indian Affairs, but this amount could in fact change. The purpose of the settlement funds is the heading here. The tribe filed claims against the Indian Health Service and Bureau of Indian Affairs for underpayment of contract support costs. Specific programs have not had the funds they were due for things like facilities and services. The settlement agreements cover those claims, and the settlement funds are for underpayment of contracted costs. The settlement agreements are silent as to whether the tribe can distribute the settlement funds in per capita payments. So that's just a sort of brief overview of where we are in relation to the two settlements. It seems like the IHS settlement is moving rather quickly. Again, we have not received any of the funds to date. We're hopeful that those funds will be made available in the near future. Again, the process for the Bureau of Indian Affairs is still ongoing. Again, we've yet to actually agree to a settlement amount, and we're likely going to have an offer come across the table here rather soon. So that's just a brief overview of the contract support costs settlement claims that we're currently engaged in with the federal government. If there are any questions related to that, it'd probably be more useful when we have the open forum. So the next presentation we're going to have is from Vice Chairman Risling, and it will be related to nepotism and conflict of interest. Vice Chair.
Good afternoon. This gives the chairman a break from standing here talking all day to you guys. Gives you a little break too. Anyway, one of the issues that has been brought forward when I was running for election as well as tribal council is the issue of nepotism and conflict of interest. And there was a lot of discussion about it that said this very difficult topic to deal with, but it's rampant throughout the tribe. And the question came, how are you going to deal with it? And it's not just me, it's the responsibility of the whole council. in government because it's a tribal law. So you either enforce it, you ignore it, you violate it, something happens to create these incidents of nepotism or a conflict. What I'm attempting to do today is to solicit comments and your feeling and provide you with some information so we can begin to address this issue and get a handle on it. I can define the problems, I can look at them in departments, I can look at them on boards, I can look at them on contracts and everything, but it needs to be fixed. And this group, the people that are sitting here and the members, are the ones that have to speak up and say, these are the issues we want you to concentrate on, and these are the issues, if the law is made and it can't be enforced, then let's look at putting some teeth into it. Or this issue is not appropriate from the time that the nepotism ordinance was passed, because it was passed considerably long ago, back in the early 80s, and it's been refined since then. My approach to this in dealing with nepotism and working with the tribal council and the chairman is we're going to deal with it, and we're going to deal with it by following the law. Now the law, we can implement it. There are some procedures in there that says you got to do certain things. They may or not happen. But what happens to us is in the nepotism ordinance, it's spread out in about three different places. And one of them is Title VIII, which addresses conflict of interest and nepotism. That's the ordinance. That's a codified section in the tribal codes, and you can go on the web and find that. The Hoopa Valley Tribal Procurement Policy. That procurement policy is kind of buried a little bit in our financial policies. The other one's Title 30, the Hoopa Valley Tribe Personnel Policy and Procedures. They all talk about nepotism, conflict of interest. Title VIII specifically was approved back in February 11th of 1999. So it's been a while since that's been addressed and looking at this stuff. The membership of the Hoopa Valley Tribe voted it in on referendum election regarding conflict of interest. So if you think about this, if the law needs to be changed and it changes the ordinance, whatever changes need to be made is going to have to go back out for referendum vote. So that's a little more detailed. It's a little bit easier if it comes down as a directive going to the departments or the boards or anybody else and say, you need to enforce these policies and you need to take a look at it. The purpose of the referendum was to have regulations that avoid self-dealing to the benefit of individual committees, boards, commissions, council members, and or their families, and apply in uniformity to all tribal operations, programs, and entities. So it applies across the board. Conflict of interest, prohibition of conflicts by the tribal council committee and or board members. No member shall use information to which they have access to advance the financial or other private interest of themselves or others. No member shall accept any valuable gifts, whether it is a form of a service, a loan, things, promises from any person who is in the interest directly or indirectly in the business dealings with the tribe, or grant any improper favors or services. Disqualification of interest. No member shall in any manner, directly or indirectly, participate in the deliberation upon or the determination of any matter affecting his or her financial interests of any corporation, partnership, individuals in which he is directly or indirectly interested in. Any member shall withdraw from the council, committee, or board member during the deliberation or determination of any matter with respect to which he is disqualified, and the minutes shall so state. Intentional noncompliance shall be considered misconduct, and the member shall be subject to removal from the council, committee, and board. Nepotism under Title VIII, no council member, committee member, or board member shall take part in the deliberation upon or in a determination of any matter affecting his spouse, son, daughter, sister, brother, mother, father, grandmother, grandfather, aunt, uncle, niece, nephew, son-in-law, daughter-in-law, brother-in-law, sister-in-law, mother-in-law, father-in-law. Such members shall withdraw from the council, committee, or board during the deliberation or determination of any matter which respect to what she is disqualified, and the minister shall so state. Intentional noncompliance shall be considered misconduct, and the member shall be subject to removal under the appropriate provision of the Constitution and bylaws. Nepotism pertaining to service on boards or committees. Members of any immediate family defined as spouse, son, daughter, father, mother, sister, brother, grandmother, grandfather, aunt, uncle, niece, nephew, and the following in-laws, son, daughter, brother, sister-in-law, mother, and father, shall not serve together on the same board or committee. Procurement policies for the Hoopa Valley Tribe. And pay attention to this one, because when it gets down to financial things, the definition of what is a conflict in relationship to your relations is expanded quite a bit. Under section 10, ethics and public contracting, part B, conflict of interest. No employee, officer, or agent of the Hoopa Valley Tribe or its subgrantees shall participate directly or indirectly in the selection or in the award or administration of any contract if a conflict, real or apparent. And that's a key thing, real or apparent. It's something you need to take a look at and consider as we look at the original codes, would be involved. Now this is under the procurement policy. Conflicts arise when a financial or other interest in a firm selected for award is held by an employee, officer, or agent. His or her relatives, including father, mother, son, daughter, brother, sister-in-law, uncle, aunt, first cousin. That's a key thing, first cousin. That's added in there. Nephew, niece, husband, wife, father, father-in-law, mother-in-law, son-in-law, brother-in-law, sister-in-law, daughter-in-law. Now we get to stepfather, stepmother, stepsons, stepdaughter, stepbrother, stepsister, half-brother, half-sister. You keep in mind that they get more in-depth, they get more defined. These requirements are spread over three or four different tribal laws. The people that put them in place for a reason, right? And they took it to that degree for a reason to kind of control this. They're not there just because somebody wanted them in there. They're in there for a reason. Differences between Title 8 and the procurement policy are listed in green. Green up on them? Yeah, you got them up there. Okay. And the standards expand to cover relationships to include first cousin and step cousin relations. And here's another one, his or her partner. And say you're married, you can be living together, you can be with there, it's whoever that partner is, if you're going to confer that on there. An organization which employs, is negotiating to employ, or has an arrangement concerning prospective employment of any of the above. Personnel Policy and Procedures, Hoopa Valley Tribal Council. This manual applies to all entities of the tribe. Tribal chartered entities may develop their own personnel manuals that are not in conflict with this manual, and that's Personnel Policy and Procedure Manual. So you can't run off and put something else in there. It has to match the tribe's requirements, and provided that there is concurrence with the tribal council. Nepotism and conflict of interest. Nepotism, as used in this policy, is defined as preferential treatment and accorded to a member of one's immediate family, as defined as spouse, son, daughter, father, mother, sister, brother, grandmother, so on. The difference between Title 8 and Title 30 are defined in green up here. In conducting the following activities, no member of a personnel selection committee, our tribal council shall participate in any portion of the selection process when it's a conflict of interest or nepotism exists. No employee or member of the tribal council shall participate in taking the personnel actions of any individual when a conflict of interest or nepotism exists. And this is a real important, the last one is, no manager, if you're the chairman, vice chairman, you're a manager, program manager, any director, applies to all of these. No manager shall promote or hire an employee that would create a conflict of interest or nepotism. I'll say this, a big major portion of our problem in nepotism and conflict of interest are created by that group. And so my position is in getting feedback from the membership to talk about how critical this stuff is to identify that. And once we identify it and identify the current needs about implementation and enforcing it, is to send it back to the managers and say, here's all of your areas of conflict of interest. Here's all the people, here's all the names, right? Tell us how you're going to fix it and bring it in compliance with tribal law. Now, if tribal law doesn't fit your situation, then make some recommendations to us about how you think we can modify that, change the law, which would have to go back out in a referendum, to fix your situation. And we'll evaluate that. But before it goes out, whatever changes, we'll not only come back to the council, we'll come back to this group. We'll come back to the tribal membership to take a look at it, because there are laws that were put in place by referendum. They're what the membership wanted at that time. And if it's still valid, if it needs to be strengthened, if it needs to have teeth put into it, then that's what we need to do. Because I'll tell you why. Within the law, we're responsible. Council has oversight. Chairman oversees all the programs and director. If they're not doing it, then maybe we need to move on if we just can't put teeth on it and look at the ethical side to this and ethics committee that looks at everything. But it needs to be dealt with because there's a lot of complaints that come out and they're always surfacing. No employee may be assigned to a unit supervised by a member of their family. And we have a lot of programs that have a lot of family members working in them. In the event the supervisor relationship is brought onto existence by the promotion of an employee, the personnel director shall recommend to the chairman the proper personnel actions to be taken on an individual case. I don't think that's been happening too much. No program manager with decision-making authority shall participate in any activity that creates a conflict of interest situation. A conflict of interest exists when a manager with decision-making authority uses or appears to use his or her position for the benefit of himself, relatives, businesses, and associates. Where we're getting complaints are people are say, I can't apply for a job there. The whole program, it just hires the family members. I can't apply it. I'm not going to get a fair shake or fair opportunity to do it. We get complaints that I'm working in this program, and while I'm working in this program, I'm fearful for myself and my security of my job because my supervisor is his cousin or his nephew or his brother or whatever. There's definitely a fear there. Contracting, why did that person get the contract on there? Why are they going to this individual, right? They have interests, they're a relative, those kind of things. Those are all surfacing out there. But I want to hear from you, and I want to have input coming back from you. What do you see in the community? You lived here all your lives. What did you see? What are you hearing? What needs to be fixed? Because this is an opportunity to get your input and look at the areas that we need to concentrate on and look at the existing laws. And if it's not working and there's a strong feeling that says, we're so interrelated, you know, nothing will work or whatever. Something has to work. We either got to change the law, we got to strengthen the law, or we have to implement it and hold people accountable. So that's why I'm here making this presentation. Thank you. I'm done.
My concern is we have policies and procedures in place already, and we are not following them. And that has always been an ongoing thing from way back, even when I was working. We've had people on the top tell us, well, you hire this person or hire that person or whatever it be. And I think that's just unfortunately going on and on. And I think we need an ethics committee so that people will stop doing these kind of things. People get hired into departments with their own family members. I've seen that numerous times in all the departments. And they already have a choice picked out who they're going to hire. And I've seen, like, okay, somebody, there's a job opening, and they put somebody in place there. That person's going to get hired. It doesn't matter if it goes out or not. It shouldn't be that way. That's not the way it's supposed to be. And so that's unfair to people who are looking for jobs.
Thank you. I just would address, I would just address, and that's the primary reason for the presentation and the issues that can continue to arise.
Ryan?
The goal is to provide the information, as like Gary, our Vice Chairman Risling suggests, take input, receive more comments, and work towards addressing the issue. Sure. Go ahead, Jim.
I made a suggestion to Gary, and this was when he first got in. My suggestion was to make it easier on the tribal members that don't know whom is in what position or whom has been working there temporarily. It should not be the people at this entity. I'll just use you for instance, Mike. Mike can make up all the questions he wants, but he or none of his employees at his office are not the interviewers. You get an interviewer from other departments, four or five people that sit down and do this, because you already have personnel and tarot sitting there, which would make it a lot easier for people to get hired, because I'm like Wanda. I mean, I remember before I had to fight darn near 6 years in tarot to get my janitor job. And I went on 20 some odd interviews. And everybody that got the job was a person that was already there working. So I'm along with Wanda. And I just thought it would be easier if you did it that way. Then nobody knows. You know, you got just different people. I thought that was fair.
Thank you.
And the other thing, all the comments and everything are great, and we talk about an ethics committee, but the ethics committee, will that be fair in how they set that up? You know, there's going to be conflict and who gets on those committees. But the number one thing that we always forget about is the education. There's a conflict there. People do not consider education as a qualification, because that we constantly, as an educated person, I constantly get discriminated within my tribe. I have some people where I'm employed at that don't even have a high school diploma that make at least $5 more than me. You know, so we're talking about discriminating and conflict. Education is key. That's what Marceline always helped everybody with, earning our education, earning our degrees, but that within our own tribal structure, we're discriminated against just because we are educated. Here we go.
Thank you. These aren't revelations. You know, when tribal members stand up and make these comments and offer these ideas, this isn't something. Obviously, this has been happening, or it's been a concern for a number of years, and we're working to address the issue. Go ahead, Rob.
Hello. I'm Robin Hosser. I just want to agree with these ladies on the hiring process. I've seen it as an issue for many years. People are put in emergency positions when, if the personnel had so much time, well, you know somebody's left. Immediately get that job advertised and make it fair for everybody, because most of the time, not all the time, and that's disappointing too, that they hire whoever they put in the emergency position, it's hand-picked. So it's very discouraging. I know personally from experience, and I do agree with Jamie, I think that the interviewing panel should be set up, you know, here's the qualifications we need, look at their qualifications and stuff, because it does seem like a pick and choose, and it doesn't set up for good morale in places. Also about the education, in my years, I just went back in 2012, got my degree, but I'll tell you, I've worked at a lot of jobs that shouldn't have disqualified me for ones that got. Sometimes we advertise a job with a master's or BA and people don't get that, but or don't have that, so we hire other people. Now we're making people who don't have GEDs or high school diplomas, and yes, they should have one, but doesn't mean that they're not qualified to do a job. And they do their job very well, that they should be discluded. We should be encouraging them that you're capable of doing this. Let's get your GED while you're doing this and work. So I just want to say I agree with both these ladies. It is a pressing, very pressing issue that's went over the years. I've been back 20 years, and I've seen it everywhere. It is so unfair, and it's discouraging to people who want to apply for other jobs, because like, oh, why waste my time? Because it's very stressful. I'm not a very good interview person at all. To be interviewed, it stresses people out, let alone know that you don't have the opportunity and they hire people with no degrees or less experience than other people to do a job that somebody else has worked for. But thank you guys for speaking up.
Thank you.
The time is 1:38 and you're listening to KIBU 91.3 FM.
Any other comments?
Taking call-ins from the
questions?
Public. The number to call is 1-844-265-5433.
Is it open? Yeah. I just want to say that to the council, that is a very tough road to hoe on the nepotism and a conflict of interest. I was just telling Gary that I heard a word was mentioned, I think you mentioned it, the council was negotiating something, and I like that word, talking about negotiating, because that emphasizes that at least it's above board, but when you're making deals, I don't like the council making deals with one another. That tells me that maybe there's something going on that isn't above board. Negotiating is a better term, in my opinion. And my opinion about the conflict of interest and nepotism. We're all related, and it's really difficult to try and spread the jobs around, because it's jobs that we're after. It's money for our living expenses and to live. And it's really tough. What I've seen in my experience being on a council is that the council has left it up to managers to make some of these decisions, knowing very well that the manager was a marginal decision about nepotism or conflict of interest. The person is hired, and then the issue gets hot enough that it gets to the council. The person's been there for a month or two, and at that point it gets to be very difficult to say, well, we got to fire that person, or we got to let that person go. And so it just creates a lot of animosity through the rest of the tribe. I think what has to happen is that when there is the appearance of a conflict of interest, before the person is hired, someone has to sign off on a PAF. And I think some of these PAFs have been signed off prematurely before that question has ever been answered. Is this a conflict of interest that's going to cause problems? Or is it a nepotism that's going to cause problems? We have time to answer those questions, ask them and get answers to them before those PAFs are signed off. It's just one little step that has to be addressed, you know, I think. And it may not cure all of the ills, but it's a step in that direction if we do that. Thank you.
I think we all agree. And again, that's the primary purpose for the presentation is to bring the issue to light. It's a policy decision that the council has to make at a certain point. Like Vice Chairman alluded to, it's a referendum that established the ordinance and the law. So that's what the tribal membership wanted, and that's what we have a responsibility to adhere to. So we are going through the process and identifying potential conflicts of interest, and the next step is to devise a plan on how to deal with that. And again, it's not likely going to be an easy process. I mean, there will likely be, you know, discomfort for a number of people for a number of reasons. If in fact folks may be put in a position where they may lose their jobs, I mean, that's not something that I'm really interested in doing up here. I personally came into office with the idea of creating more jobs, not necessarily saying, hey, you have to go home. You can't work for the tribe anymore in your current capacity, although you may be performing the job at a really high level. But are there other alternatives to that? Maybe. And that's a process that we are all undertaking and trying to figure out, because as people have suggested, it is a problem, and there are concerns about hiring and who may or may not get jobs, who has an opportunity, a real opportunity, a certain position. So yeah, we understand that, and it is something that we're going to address and get to the bottom of. Yeah.
I think the departments know what they need to, who they need to hire, you know, because they know what they're looking for, I think. And I think sometimes the council oversteps their bounds by trying to encourage them to hire certain people, and they shouldn't be doing that. There's just things that they need to do on their own. If they're not able to manage a department, then maybe they shouldn't be working there. And they should be writing their own things, that their qualifications and things that they need for their people. And that should already be on hand. It shouldn't have to be written up at the last minute. It should be done ahead of time.
Sure.
So they know what they're looking for.
I agree. And no, we'll go through the process, annual process of evaluations and identify deficiencies, identify strengths, identify areas that are in between, and we'll move forward in that fashion. Again, you know, the tribal council is evaluated every 2 years, so it's, you know, we all have to face a time when we have to, somebody's going to determine whether or not we're doing our job correctly. And if the tribal membership feels like certain things, certain programs can operate at a higher level, well, that's something that we have to address and make the determination if that is in fact the truth. No, I understand that. I'm not in a position of micromanaging, personally. That's not my style. If a manager, again, the managers are all of the tribe's experts. We hire them. A lot of them have been hired already, and they come with a certain level of expertise that I don't have specifically in that particular profession. For instance, the fisheries program. I rely heavily on the director of the program, and it's no different in any of the other programs. Okay, so if information then comes forward where there are ways in which we can improve, then you know those are things that we will have to address. So me specifically, as well as the tribal council. There's no doubt about it. Joe.
Joseph Orozco, tribal member. Station manager, I had a question on, could you define first cousin? Is first cousin once removed, first cousin twice removed? Because I, as a manager, I had a board of directors, and one of my board of directors was a first cousin once removed. Now, and you know, the tribal council appoints the board of directors. They're not elected officials. So that would mean if there is a department that has a board of directors that's appointed, then the council would have to also make sure that the appointees to that board are not related to the manager who are directly under that board of directors. I just want to make that point. So if you could define to what degree first cousins is, it would answer something for me in my mind. Thank you.
Yeah, the vice chairman points out it just says first cousin, so it should be more clearly defined. I think that's, you know, we're not here to if there are changes that need to be made, there'd be more clarification on these types of things, then that's what needs to happen. Again, I had a discussion about a nephew, for instance. It doesn't say you can't hire your great nephew or your great niece, but I mean, that's, I guess, would appear to be a conflict, but if it's not specifically in the ordinance defining it, can you or can you not do it? In the interest of time, we do need to move on. We can also, if there are other questions, we can continue to address the topic in the open forum. I guess we're going to move to the new cultural advisory committee. Yeah, and you can come up front or wherever you want. Let's just introduce my first cousin here, Slish.
My name is Solicitan Jackson. I'm the curator for the Hoopa Tribe Museum, and I'm supposed to talk about the Cultural Advisory Committee. So what happened is that there are two new departments within the museum. There is a TIPO department, a Tribal Historic Preservation Officer, and their duties are to protect the culture from anybody that is in any kind of way, actually. It can be noise, it can be disturbance of the ground. If Caltrans is currently making road improvements, so the TIPO officer and myself have cultural monitors at the sites because they're making road improvements through two old village sites, through the old fort. So these monitors are supposed to watch for any things of cultural significance. The TIPO works with any agency or department, like I said, that breaks ground or may want to make a trail near a cultural site or a historic site. It's their job to protect the interest of the culture, not the interest of a department or an individual or even the tribe, but the interest of the culture. So that's a new position, Kadush Colgrove right over here. So also, the other department is the NAGPRA department, the Native American Graves Protection Repatriation Act. So the TIPO and the NAGPRA have a lot of federal laws that overlap. If the TIPO is supposed to watch out for any ground disturbances and funerary objects, the NAGPRA officer is supposed to do the same thing. So it's just natural to put these two things together. So the NAGPRA officer also would make claims on behalf of the tribe for repatriation of items of cultural patrimony or religious significance to the tribe from other museums or agencies within the United States that receive federal monies. So any museum or agency that has HOOPA items that does not receive federal monies is exempt. The only agency that is exempt that does receive federal monies is the Smithsonian. So, just recently, a few weeks back, she and I and two of our tribal leaders went to the Fields Museum in Chicago, and they had over 600 pieces of HOOPA artifacts. So, it's our job to get these things back that are religious in nature, are important to the culture of the Hoopa people. So those are the two new departments within the museum structure besides our collections care management, the aspects of the Living Museum, the loan structure we have for things to use within the ceremony. But with those two new departments, we're required by law to have an advisory committee. So within this advisory committee, they're supposed to advise the TIPO officer and the NAGPRA officer on issues that come up with TIPO and NAGPRA. So we went to the council saying that we'd like a committee, and then the council told us that there's so many committees already out there. Every department seems to have their own committee. And they asked Kedushcha to make one overall arching committee that everybody would use. So it wasn't something we wanted to do, it was something we were appointed to do. And they asked her to come up with bylaws and things that would be used on this committee. So we're currently in the process of that. We had a community meeting 2 days ago that was scheduled on the 8th. It was in the paper and it was put in the flyers of all the mailboxes. And then, well, I'll tell you what we plan to do first. So to say who's on a cultural committee, and we don't know what powers the council will give this committee beyond the scope of our own work for TIPO and NAGPRA, we have no idea what the council plans to do. We just know what we need for our department. So we decided, and this is just, it's something that's not set in stone, is that we would use cultural or religious leaders within the committee, and then our idea was to have council members appoint other people to the committee. So the committee would be rather large. But after our community meeting, what the gist of that was is that the people at the community meeting said they wanted an even bigger committee that was, wasn't exclusive but inclusive to many people throughout the tribe, and that this huge committee, they would have people who would be interested in NAGPRA or TIPO or language or ceremony, and those members within the committee would go help work on those aspects. But there would be times where we would come together as one huge committee and make decisions, big decisions. So that's where we kind of are right now. We're open to ideas, comments. Huh? Oh, Kedushcha has paperwork. There was paperwork that was given out. It's over there. There's a form for the things I spoke about, and you can put your comments and ideas on that. And we'll use that and we'll present it to the council, and eventually the council will make a decision on how this committee will form and what this committee does. Any questions?
When the issue was brought forward to the tribal council, my response was this is could be so contentious on the issue of defining who would be on a committee and what it would be comprised of, that my recommendation was develop your proposal, bring it to the general meeting, and solicit comments so you could shape this thing before you ever bring it back to the council and ask for it to go out on the Legislative Procedure Act. The Tribal Council, I don't think, has ever defined who were the religious leaders, who were the cultural people that put on the dances and pray and whatever. There's always been a separation there. And then to appoint other people to it, the council or anybody else, we wanted feedback from the membership and from the people that do these activities, the people that are committed to it, and a tribal member. And that's why it's out here on this forum today. There is no solid commitment other than the proposal that they're making today for comment.
So So my name is Kedustra Colgrove, and I am the TIPO officer for the tribe. And I think it's really important that we clarify that this committee would have no authority in decision-making processes regarding our religious functions. That was never the intention of this committee. And like I don't believe that the tribal council has ever had that authority, and it would not be something that would come forward through this committee. So we want to make that really clear, that this committee is not being designed to have any kind of control or authority over religious functions. What we're looking at is to create a committee that is responsible for consultation and protection of our culture and religion. Not something that's going to create issues, but something that we are legally obligated to do through the National Historic Preservation Act, as well as the Native American Graves Protection and Repatriation Act. I'd also like to point out that tribes throughout California have TIPO officers, and they have this program, and they are adhering to this consultation process. We are one of the last tribes throughout California to do this. Other tribes have been doing this for 20, 30 years. So we are not in the forefront with this process, but we are moving forward in asserting this responsibility. It's a responsibility of consultation. It's assuming SHPO functions that the state now controls over the reservation. We have authority off of the reservation if we can put this process through and prove that we can do this on the reservation. Yes.
I would just like to say that she said we're way at tail end of everything. This law was actually formed in 1966 regarding the TIPO functions.
Good afternoon. My name is Lois Risling, and I probably will need you to pull me off of here. No. Anyway, but I first want to say I believe that the tribe needs to have a TIPO officer. I really do believe that. And that we should be involved in NEGPRA. But I am concerned about the proposal for the Cultural Advisory Committee, just on the document that you handed out. We have to be very careful of the words that we choose. We saw that in Vice Chairman Risling's presentation on nepotism and conflict of interest, because you put in words there that seem simple. They do have other meanings. So, for example, it says the committee will be responsible for advising the Hoopa Tribal Council on issues that have been referred to the advisory committee for review by the Tribal Historic Preservation Officer and the Hoopa Tribal Council. So the way that reads, I interpret that to mean that those two positions are the ones that are talking to the council and not this committee. And it puts the committee in a secondary position in the way that that's written, so that inadvertently now the council is going to impact on our traditional practices that have been separate. We also, in your qualifications, you say that the advisory committee has to talk about land stewardship. Land stewardship in Hoopa, like it for good or bad, is under the law, Title 10. That tells us how we're going to do that, and that's clearly within the realm of the council. But now we're going to be giving two positions and this advisory committee some kind of role in that. We also talk about burial practices and gathering practices. So I think really looking at the language and what you're using is important. Also, there's one seat that shall be filled by a staff member from the Cultural Resources Program who will serve as the liaison between the Hoopa Valley Tribal Council and the committee. So the committee is not really giving advice to the board on the way this is set up. I also have a problem with having one. I don't think we should have an overarching mega committee, a super committee, that's going to talk about our culture. Our culture is very, very broad. You know, I'm not a Christian myself, but I have very close family who are very Christian. They're like elders in their church and stuff. That is part of our culture now. Whether I want to admit it or not, that's part of our culture. So I think that I really urge you, if we're going to have such a committee as this, because I know tribes that don't have culture committees for TIPO or NAGPRA. They have other ways that they function with this. I went and looked in the RFPs and I couldn't see where it said that these were mandatory committees. They are encouraged. It's a way that you can deal with things. But I think putting in another level of bureaucracy is risky. And I urge the council to be very cautious of this, because we have a system that we've worked out since 1869, when we first started doing sovereign government, as opposed to our own traditional form of government, that has separated those two functions and those two entities. We must maintain that. We must also understand that if we set this committee up, we need to have safeguards in here that do not allow for the inadvertent application and defining HOOPA people out of culture. Because if you do that, that's going to impact on our arguments on fisheries. It's going to impact on our arguments on forest lands. It's going to impact on who we are. I really encourage you to be cautious. Thank you.
According to the TIPO functions, if you look in the regs, CFR 800 of Section 106 of the National Preservation Act, it says that the TIPO would be the delegated authority. That would be the person who protects the culture. And if it is, they can use a committee. We wanted to use a committee, but we wanted to use this committee for our TIPO and NAGPRA functions. So it does say that this person here is the designated delegated authority for the TIPO, for Section 106. Section 106, it's a federal law. So it would supersede any tribal ordinance. It would supersede any state, county, or city law.
I'd also like to comment that in the qualifications, we are looking for people with information or knowledge in these areas. We're not ascertaining any kind of authority over these areas, but we're looking for people to serve on the committee that have this kind of cultural knowledge. Like I said before, this committee is a consultation committee. It's being established to ensure that we're meeting our consultation obligation through these two acts. In the assumption of responsibilities for SHPO through the National Park Services, we are required to have an advisory board. Lois, I brought you the application because you had asked for that earlier. And we are required to prove that we have a way of representing cultural people through our program.
So I would like to jump in for just a moment. One of the things that I'm looking for with this committee, because this was born a while back. This was actually born around the time that we started putting together the job position for the TIPO officer and NAGPRA officer. The hope at that time was a way for bringing cultural items home to the valley and start to really go out and looking at that. But within that program, we also need assistance from people that have the traditional knowledge to help put those documents together in order to bring them home. We've seen neighboring tribes actually go out and bring home large quantities from the Smithsonian and other museums and have been really proactive in bringing dance objects home. My feeling on this is that dance objects are members of our community, are members of our tribe, and should come home. And so the idea of the committee was born within in that venue. But then going further, we also seen where other programs need some sort of committee to help develop documentation that they're having to put forth. It's within the timber plans. They have to have some some cultural committees within that for timber harvests. It goes clear across. And so I think that's what we're looking at. The document that came forward at this point is a draft document. So this has not been set in stone, nor has it been solidified by the council as what we have going. I think that there will be a number of different times that it's open for public comment. We've just had the first public comment on it the other day, but it's going to be a living document, something that will change because we're living people. It's a living culture, and so things will have to change. There's, 3,200 plus members, and I think all the members will want something to say within this committee, and they should have that ability. And I think that's what Josie's looking for. But I know that time's getting short on us on this. I just want to put a little plug in for some of the work that Josie's done in her past 7 months with us on the job. We just put in a grant application for a cultural resource center / museum with a community area. She's put it out for a contract to have a design for the building. The building will be a beautiful building. Council, I think it was 2 weeks ago, decided on the land base, which will be a downtown area. So there's a number of projects that are in the works. Going back to Chicago, I was part of that trip going back because it was their first view of museums, and because of my background experience with museums, I was asked to attend with them. And there we seen 600, I think it was 41 objects. Out of that, I posted a lot of it on Facebook, but there were 10 jump dance headdresses, a multitude of dresses, jump dance baskets. I don't even know how many dance feathers, three white deer. And for me, it was really sad to go in and go through this stuff because I could feel the objects crying to come home. And that's what I'm hoping that through this process and working with Josie through the repatriation, we'll be able to start doing. But I am so happy that we did get the grant in for a cultural resource center and a museum facility. And so I think we have high expectations that Josie's going to do a phenomenal job.
So in this, the document that we sent out or that we have here, we would like for you to make comments. We want this committee to be a reflection of our community and a reflection of our values. I can tell already that we are going to be in conflict of the nepotism law. It's just going to happen. So I think that we really need for comments, and we really would like to know what it is that you would like to include in this committee. We have no agenda. I do agree with Lois that we need to make it very clear that this committee in no way has any kind of authority over our religious functions. I would say that in our history, our tribal council has always been separate from that function, and I think that it needs to remain that way. So I want to make that clear, that in no way are we trying to assert any kind of authority over religious functions. However, we do need for our religious leaders to participate in order to make this a successful program. Yes. Initially, when we had talked about it, we were thinking 14, 15 people. We had intended for it to be a volunteer committee. When the council discussed it, they wanted us to create a committee with bylaws that adhered to the policy and procedures of the tribal committees, which would mean that we would need to find a way to pay for that.
As far as I know, they haven't put anything in the budget.
Okay. So that being said, other tribes function as a paid committee. Some don't. When we talked about having a community meeting and asking for community input, the general consensus was that they wanted the committee to be inclusive. And I agree with that because there are so many valuable contributions that we all have. And we can all contribute to making this a better environment, and I think that by keeping it inclusive, we're moving in the best direction. Thank you.
There's another community meeting I think was advertised in the newspaper, which I'm not sure is that.
That was
Oh, it was yesterday. Okay. Okay, there will be more community outreach, and if you guys could stick around too, if there are additional questions in the open forum portion of the meeting. And I don't mean to cut off that important discussion, but we do need to move along with the agenda. Again, you know, the first three items that we've discussed obviously are some hot button issues, and there needs to be more discussion about what it is we are going to do, how are we going to come together and advise if it's the committee or address the conflict of interest. That's why these meetings are important. And again, I think at a certain point, we have talked about this as a council. We need to have meetings that are specific to these issues. And whether they're in this facility or in the tribal council facility or somewhere else, it's important to bring people together and allow for an open discussion about all of these issues that people are obviously passionate about or have know some interest in. That's, I mean, that's what we're trying to do. That's the open and transparent government. That's being inclusive of everybody and everybody's opinions.